From Genetic Engineering and Biotechnology News, this is the GenCast Network. Bringing you compelling and in-depth interviews with the biotech industry's leading researchers, newsmakers, and thought leaders. This week on the GenCast Network, Dr. Andreas Persides from BioVista is interviewed by Gen's editor-in-chief John Sterling about drug repositioning.
Dr. Andreas Persides is the CEO of BioVista, which is a privately held biotechnology company. BioVista focuses on finding novel uses for existing drugs and profiles their side effects using their mechanism of action. The company is also developing its own drug pipeline in multiple indications. Dr. Persides, would you provide us with a good working definition of drug repositioning?
John, thank you for taking the time and for the interview. And drug repositioning in its simplest form would be the discovery of a new use for an existing drug. We tend to think of drugs as little kitty cats. They would have nine lives or so. So the assumption that a drug would only be good in one indication has been proven to be exactly that, an assumption. And drug repositioning is the exercise whereby you attempt to find additional novel indications for a drug. In most instances, this will be done by accident, but on occasion, some serendipity and some systematic approach will help you to uncover new potential uses for a drug. This is called drug repositioning, or indication expansion, or drug repurposing, or exploration of space, that kind of thing. But in essence, drug repositioning is the attempt to uncover a novel use for an existing drug with all the marvelous benefits that that entails.
What motivates drug companies to view repositioning as a business strategy, and what do they hope to accomplish?
That's an excellent question, John, and I think that first it will begin with the perception that pharma companies want to give to patients, and rightly so. Patients are in a hurry. They can't always wait for 10 or 15 years for a brand new drug to be developed. So wouldn't it be nice if there were a way where one could use existing drugs and try to maximize their impact for patients? So patients are very much at the center of this strategy, but of course it goes a little bit beyond. And it has to do with the fact that repositioning is part of the portfolio approach that drug companies use in order to develop their pipelines. As we all know, drug development is a portfolio approach, which is, at the end of the day, is all about managing risk. And specifically, what repositioning will enable drug companies to do, and which is why they're incorporating it into their approaches, there are five things that it will enable them to do, I think. One is to obviously increase their top line. Two, it would be to reduce the risk if you're beginning with an existing drug around which you have excellent safety information and clinical experience, your risk is reduced. Three, because it's an existing drug, you're likely to get to the market that much sooner and realize that top revenue advantage. Four, it's very important by repositioning to enjoy the benefit of protecting yourself against generic and off-label use and putting up an extra barrier to what happens when you lose patent exclusivity. And I think the fifth, but certainly not least at all, reason why big companies and small companies are working with repositioning as part of their strategy is because it helps them differentiate their drugs against incumbents in existing markets. If I use an existing drug in a novel indication with a novel mechanism of action, I'm differentiating what my drug does against the competition and incumbents. And so those five things are probably the key reasons that motivate drug companies to practice drug repositioning.
What are some of the key elements for achieving a successful drug repositioning program?
In my view, John, there are three important elements to achieve a successful drug repositioning program, and all three need to be practiced with the same ferocity of intent, as I like to call it. First, you need to do this across the entire pipeline. It serves you no purpose at all to attempt to reposition one drug in a pipeline. A typical pharmaceutical company pipeline will have probably a couple of hundred candidates in various advanced stages of development. including the ones that are on the market. It serves you no purpose to do it for one. If you can do it for one, you should explore doing it for all, and therefore it's fundamentally important for the successful program to operate across the entire pipeline in order to realize that portfolio benefit that we were talking about earlier. The second element, I think, of a successful repositioning approach is to integrate it as early as possible in the discovery and development effort. Don't wait until something is in the clinic or is in phase three and running very significant 50-50 odds of success or failure. Don't wait until then in those massive dollar commitments before you have an idea whether your drug might work in a different patient subpopulation and has a life somewhere else. So integrate this as early as possible. And last, extending that concept, the third portion of a successful repositioning program is to ensure that it applies not only across the entire pipeline and certainly is initiated early on, but that it is a constant standard operating procedure throughout the entire life cycle of a drug. Even when it is on the market, explore further indications for it so as not only to differentiate it against competitors, but also to protect yourself against generic use and also to help you open up additional avenues of research you may not have anticipated before. So the three elements for me for a successful repositioning program, just to re-summarize them, would be do it across the pipeline, do it early, and then third, ensure that it is maintained throughout the life cycle of a drug.
Would you give us some examples of companies that have successfully repositioned therapeutic products?
I think that this list is vast, and I will give you some of my favorites. I will start with something that always brings a smile to people's eyes, and it would be Lumigan, which would be Allergan's glaucoma drug, which was repositioned as Latisse in eyelash growth. And I would also cite AstraZeneca's lignocaine, which, of course, is a well-known local anesthetic, which was repositioned as an anti-arrhythmic drug. I would cite Lilly's antidepressant fluoxetine, which has found additional life by Lilly in premenstrual dysphoria. I would cite as a generic class of drugs all estrogens, which were originally developed in contraception and have found repositioning life as hormone replacement therapy drugs, and certainly one of the cases that everybody knows and talks about a lot would be Sinefadil or Viagra, which started life as a pulmonary antihypertension drug and has found repositioning marketplace in erectile dysfunction. And those are a few. There are many, many more examples of successfully repositioned drugs throughout the industry. In fact, it should not surprise your audience to learn that in the last 3-4 years, approximately 30% or better of drugs first approved for marketing, firstly marketed in the U.S. alone, are repositioned drugs or life cycle extended drugs. So it's a major, major contributor to pipeline development.
Let's talk about BioVista. Would you describe BioVista's activities in the drug repositioning market? What's unique about your approach to helping companies reposition their products and to develop your own therapeutic pipeline?
You're asking me to talk about BioVista, which is my favorite subject. I will be delighted to do so. BioVista's activities focus on using mechanism of action to essentially translate preclinical research data into clinical outcome, including benefit risk. This is how we practice repositioning, by putting mechanism of action at the front and center of the activity. We developed our technology, which we call the clinical outcome search space, or COS for short, that will match a unique 20-dimensional signature of all drugs in the public domain and in development against all 23,000 diseases, 6,000 adverse events, and 20,000 human targets, and do this mapping of one mechanism of action against every other mechanism of action to the degree that the data allow us to do so. Think of it simply like matching service between buyers and sellers, where the matching is done on many, many dimensions, and this is exactly what we do with a specific set of 20 dimensions that will help us match drugs against diseases, against adverse events, and against targets. What would those dimensions be? It would obviously be the targets and the pathways, but not only that, how do those targets and pathways vary by different cell type or organ system in the body? To expect that a network of targets will work the same way in the brain as it would in the liver or in heart muscle would give science an injustice. It wouldn't be the right way of doing it. And in our hands, we explore the variation of targets and pathways across cell types, organ systems in the body. One of my favorites, how do these pathways vary by different patient groups? Will an osteoporotic patient respond to the same way to a particular pathway modulation versus a diabetic patient? How do these underlying scenarios alter these pathways? And last but not least, what we integrate in our technology is the ability to understand the so-called compensatory mechanisms, John, which account for why in one scenario a drug will work one way, but in another patient context it will work in another way. So in summary, the clinical outcome search space tech, the cost tech that we have developed, is a vast matching service, if you like, that connects mechanistically all drugs against all diseases, all adverse events, and all human targets tracked by medicine, and it gives us a ranking of possible indications for a drug or of possible drugs for an indication, which we then validate experimentally. Which brings me to the second part of your question. We have used this to develop our own pipeline of drugs quite successfully, and we're validating these as we go forward.
Well, continuing to look at BioVista, what are some of the more promising drugs in your own repositioned pipeline?
I would start by saying that first and foremost, we love all of our drugs in the BioVista pipeline. Of course we do. And I will cite our two candidates in progressive multiple sclerosis and our one candidate in epilepsy and our one candidate in Parkinson's disease and our two candidates in glioblastoma multiforme and thyroid cancer and melanoma. So between those, we feel that we have an excellent, robust pipeline of advanced preclinical candidates matched against some pretty major unmet medical needs that excite us, and we look forward to developing these on our own and through our partnerships.
Now, finally, and you've hinted at this in one of your earlier answers, how does the FDA approval process for repositioned drugs differ from the process of submitting a completely novel new drug application, and what does this all mean for companies who are really looking at getting into the repositioned drug market?
What an excellent question, John, and first, I need to start with the requisite caveat that I love this space and I'm an active participant in the space, but I will never claim to be an expert on the FDA approval process. But I do know that no matter what the drug, whether it is a repositioned drug or a new chemical entity or new biologic entity, it is very, very good practice at the earliest opportune moment to sit down with FDA and discuss exactly what would be required in order to move that candidate forward. So in our own practice, we don't separate out the fact that our drugs are repositioned drugs versus other types of drugs that are not repositioned when we interact with the FDA. Now, having said that, there are specific mechanisms and regulatory mechanisms, specifically the 505(b)(2) mechanism, which allows you to reuse, if you like, existing data with certain caveats in your new IND submission. So it is possible to not need to recapitulate a great deal of studies that have already taken place for a drug and for you to be able to reuse certain of those studies in your new submission to FDA. And this is the entire well-known, well-understood 505(b)(2) process that is used by a lot of companies, including original sponsors who reposition their own drugs. But at the end of the day, the takeaway message from this particular, for this particular question, from my point of view, is that no matter what the type of drug is, it is always to the sponsor's advantage to sit down early with the FDA and determine what the process exactly needs to be.
I'm John Sterling. Thanks for listening. If you would like to comment on this week's podcast, please go to our podcast section at www.genengnews.com and give us your thoughts. We'd really like to hear from you. Bye for now.
To learn more about topics discussed in this GenCast, or to listen to previous GenCasts, visit our website at www.genengnews.com. For the Gen Publishing editorial staff, I'm Jonathan Ellinghaus, saying thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in again next week to the GenCast Network.